This time last week, the nation was filled with optimism. The prospect of Wembley and a football match and glory, and tens of millions were fixed to the television screens looking out for this. 12 hours later, a very different emotion and feeling gripped our nation. People who'd been holding out, football supporters who'd wanted England to win for decades a major tournament, had their hopes dashed. Children who'd been wound up and got all excited, singing "Football's Coming Home," utterly devastated. The players, undeniably, very, very heartbroken because of what had happened. The manager described it as having his stomach ripped out. And maybe some of you had similar feelings as a result. I know we were incredibly disappointed. And that's the emotion I want to think about today, being disappointed. Now you might say to me, okay, but it's only a game and it's not the end of the world. Of course it is. It's just sport. It's not so crucial. But actually, it's not just in sport that we suffer tremendous disappointments. So last week was just a prompt to me to think about how we handle it. And as we go into a summer of supposed freedom with COVID numbers increasing, maybe this is a good time to challenge ourselves about disappointment. Because life, with all its imperfections and conflicts of interest, is full of situations that will let you down. So many situations you might think of, careers that don't work out quite as you might have hoped, family life that ends up being very different from what had been imagined. Trying to buy a house and it falls through, and the wrong people seem to come and be involved. Your car, your beloved vehicle breaking down, or something in your home and requires an outlay of money. Holidays that can't be taken, breaks that are not going to be an opportunity. Governments let us down. Illness lets us down. As we get older, our bodies let us down and people let us down. Your spouse at some point is going to let you down and you will be disappointed and you will disappoint them. Our parents let us down. Children let us down. People let us down. And some of you might say, God, at times it feels lets us down. So when we're racked with disappointment, how do we deal with these things? When things don't go as we plan, as we hope, we feel that sense of, oh no, it's all gone wrong. There's also a sense of sadness and frustration that results because of failure, whether it's our own failure or someone else's failure, and we feel just so disappointed. And it can be something that is very temporary, but it can also be long lasting. It can be a passing emotion just because of a temporary loss, maybe like a football match. But when something happens that changes the course of life or permanently changes how we are to go about those things we'd hoped for, it can have a major impact in our lives. And it can stay with us for all time and then show up as a kind of shadow through the reactions that we show in the rest of our lives. So how do you deal with disappointment? Or do you just ignore it? There's good reason not to ignore our disappointment. Because when we let it fester, when it's unchecked, it escalates into so much more. I want to share with you something that I read from a Christian writer on this subject, who described disappointment as being just the tip of a kind of iceberg, of a pyramid of events, which, if we don't check it, can escalate into something more. You can see disappointment there is in the top section of that triangle, that pyramid. But if we don't look at it carefully, disappointment can become discouragement, the next section down. If discouragement is not checked, it becomes disillusionment. If disillusionment isn't dealt with, it can become depression. And if depression isn't addressed, it can escalate to the defeat of God's people. That's the challenge of what disappointment can do. And you might be able to follow that whole trail as some people have gone through the COVID situation in the past 12 months. So what do we do about it? Well, there are lots of examples in scripture where people have had to deal with disappointment. Abraham, because of not having the child that he wanted to. Actually, on that subject alone, Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, Hannah, mother of Samuel, Elizabeth, all had real disappointment in their lives, devastatingly so, because of children. Job had disappointment, of course, because of all the losses that accumulated when he had things taken away from his life. Then he had disappointment with the so-called comforters who were supposed to be trying to help him. He even had disappointment with God. Moses was disappointed with the people when they bowed down and worshipped the golden calf. And Moses was disappointed with his brother, Aaron, who'd made the golden calf in the first place. Disappointment. But this morning, I want to think about Elijah and the immense disappointment that he had to go through. We've read from chapter 19, but if you know chapter 18, you'll know that's where this was an enormous victory over all the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. Totally defeated, 700 of them removed, just like that. And I'm sure that Elijah was thinking, this is it. This is the beginning of revival for the nation of Israel. God was going to find his place once more. But instead, it just ended up with him having a price on his head. And actually, we read he was so disappointed, he wanted to die. Disappointment is a very human response, and it usually comes when we have narrow or distorted expectations and hopes and perspectives. And Elijah was just that person with the wrong perspectives. He believed he was the only person left, and he believed that he was isolated and he was doomed. He lost his focus. He was so afraid, he runs for his life, and he's found in a desert place, which is where many of us can end up if we allow disappointment over anything that has taken place in our lives to take control. Well, eventually he stops. And the good thing is he cries out to God. Actually, he complains, and he complains, and he says, I've had enough. I'm no better off than any of my ancestors, and I'd be better off if I was dead. That's quite a challenge, isn't it? And you might think, well, the God who expects us to be faithful and trusting would be angry, but this is not God. The God that we have knows what we go through. He knows that we struggle. And he has no problem with us complaining. What he wants us to do is come to him. And did you notice that in this account, God met him? He met Elijah precisely where he was, in his misery, in the desert. He understood what he was going through. He heard exactly what was going on in his life. And what did he do? Did he straighten him out? Did he hit him with a stick? No, he let him sleep And after he'd slept for a while, he woke him up and said, eat, and provided him with food. What does God do? He meets our needs, all of our needs, and he met here his human needs first. And the second time the angel touched him, he said, get up and eat. The journey is too much for you. Do you realize that sometimes God knows that the journey is too much? And when you can't cope, and when you are disappointed and distressed because of the burdens of life that you are carrying, he doesn't get angry with you. He wants you to rest, to get restored, to be in a place where he can work with you and help you through it. And only when he's strengthened again does God get him to go back on a journey. And he sends him on quite a journey. It's a long journey, and it's to Mount Horeb. Does that ring any bells? Do you get the symbolism of where he's sending him? Horeb is the place where God met with Moses on that first occasion in the burning bush and said, I want you to go to Egypt to release my people and bring them back here to this mountain to worship me. It's where the people came in Exodus 19 and God explained the covenant he was going to have with his people. It's where he was giving them the Ten Commandments. And it's here that he's sending Elijah. The picture here is of taking him after he's restored him, fed him, given him rest. He brings him to a place where he can find and worship God. God gets him out of his focus. And that's what he does. He takes us away from that situation. If you were a great football fan and last week you were so gutted, can you imagine what would have happened if after the game had finished, you'd then recorded the whole thing for posterity, then gone back and watched it again and watched all the places where mistakes had been made. And oh, did he need to bring him on? Oh, if he just pushed that penalty slightly to the left and watching those dirty Italian footballers. Can you imagine if you spent the whole week going through that and festering in it, you'd still be in a place of misery today. God takes Elijah away from his focus. And then after he's rested, after he's recuperated, he challenges him with a question. The same question he asks twice, suggests it's important. What are you doing here, Elijah? He's asking him, what do you think is going on here? Elijah, who do you think I am? He's bringing him back to the core to question, what is this all about? And Elijah's response is threefold. First, he says, but I've been zealous. I've worked really hard. Have you ever done that? And someone challenges you and he tells God, but I've done really well. I deserve better than this. He has his own ideas, but actually he's filled with self-pity. That's his first response. His second is to talk about others, what others have not done right. Those Israelites, they've broken your covenants. They've not done what they're supposed to do. He's critical. It's the blame game, isn't it? The situation's gone wrong. So often we get disappointed in people and we get disappointed in what we think should come out of a situation. And we start to blame or we start to be critical. And then the third response is he tells God, I'm all alone. I'm the only one left. And now they're trying to kill me too. He's feeling isolated. He's feeling it's hopeless. He's absolutely lost sight of who he is before God. Do you remember? I think it was last week. We reminded ourselves. If it wasn't last week, it was the week before. Reminded ourselves of those three core things that all human beings crave: significance, security and purpose. And he'd lost those things that he had in God. He'd lost his perspective. So God starts to restore him. And he tells him to go and stand out on the mountain. He needs an encounter with God, but the first thing God is going to do is show him where he is not. And the first thing that happens is this strong wind that is, must have been something like a tornado that was so strong it tore the mountain apart, but God was not in the wind. Then came the earthquake. It must have shaken the ground, but God was not in the earthquake. And then came the fire, such devastating potential, but God was not in the fire. And then came what is described as the gentle whisper, meaning literally a voice of sheer or thin silence. And this is where God was. The place you wouldn't expect. We think of God, don't we, when we're in a crisis, as being the one who's going to come in and change the crisis, who's going to turn it all around, something dramatic. Come on, Lord, heal me of this disease. Lord, give me the holiday I've been looking forward to. Take the COVID away. We come to God expecting him in the dramatic. But what he finds when things are quiet is that God is actually in the stillness, in the quiet of the moment. Don't know whether any of you have been to St. Paul's Cathedral, but when Sir Christopher Wren designed St. Paul's Cathedral, I wonder whether he ever understood in advance of what remarkable acoustic properties he would give to the dome. It now has what is called the Whispering Gallery around it. And it's said, I've not tried it, but it's said if you stand on one side, you can hear somebody whispering on the other side. Such are the amazing acoustics. Well, God is the perfect design. And he's able to speak to us even in the silence. When we are disappointed, it is helpful to slow down. First, to rest, to restore, to regroup ourselves. But when the noise of the problem starts to quieten, when our mind stops spinning with everything that is going on, we find space. And in that space, in the gentle whisper, in the thin silence, we find God's presence with us. Elijah was fragile, he was fearful, he was disappointed, but God spoke to him tenderly in a whisper. Actually, that is the nature of God. That's how he speaks to us. There are a couple of amazing verses in Luke's gospel in chapter 1, and it comes from Zechariah, who, if you remember, lost his voice because he initially doubted God. And he's just given his new child the name John, and he's about to explain how God is going to do something amazing. And this is how he says it in verse 78 of Luke 1. Because of the tender mercy of our God, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven, to shine on those living in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the path of peace. Peace with God comes in the quietness of knowing and recognizing his presence, not through the dramatic crash bang wallop of some major event that might take place. What about you? Do you find yourself in a place where you are disappointed, maybe anxious because things are not working out as you might wish? The encouragement this morning from the example of Elijah is to yield to God's tenderness, to find space, to be quiet, away from the noise, away from that issue that has distracted. Is that what you desperately need? And I encourage you to find space to hear God's voice. Be reminded of who he is. And as Elijah was, reminded of his significance in God's eyes. But then what about others? There are so many people in our nation, maybe in our families, who are hurting, who are anxious for the future, especially now with the current news and what this summer may bring. Those who've gone through this 16 months of trauma because of COVID, people who are lonely, people struggling with illness, people with bereavements, people who have lost their jobs and have no sense of who they are anymore, people with tremendous debt. I wonder if there's a role for us to people who are struggling to find hope. Is there a place for us to bring the silence of God's presence? I'm not just trying to say that as a fancy cliche. I actually mean in the business, in the noise of their lives, to step in and be with them, but to bring the silence of God's presence. You know, so often when people are disturbed and anxious and they're pulled down, the thing that they want is not some solution from you, from the words of your mouth. The thing that they are wanting is to know that they're heard. The thing we can bring in our silence, actually, if we close our mouths and just listen, is we bring the silence of God's presence into that situation. And so at this point, God asks the question again, and Elijah gives the same response. He's still a little bit trapped in his own perspective. He's alone. He's in danger. He's hopeless. He's stuck with his perspective. And so God's response is to give him a new perspective, to give him his perspective. He gives him hope by sharing what's really going on. And he sends him back on a journey, back into the desert of Damascus. And there he's going to be in the real world, and he's going to be working, and he's going to know what God is about, because this is God's world. And he's going to find that he's not alone. You remember I just said that God had restored to him his significance. Well, here he restores to him the two other things that he needs. First, his security. He says, "You are not alone. I've reserved 7,000 who have not bowed down to the Baals." And then he restores his purpose. He's going to give him a task. He reminds him what he's doing here. He's about God's business, and he sends him out. First, he's going to anoint Hazael to be the king over Aram. Then he's going to anoint Jehu to be king over Israel. Then he's going to anoint Elisha, who's going to be his right-hand man and the prophet who's eventually going to replace him. God is very much in control. This is not a disaster. He changes Elijah from his perspective to God's, and he sets him on a new path. He's disappointed. He feels it's hopeless because he's focusing on his own problem and the unfairness of it all. What's so desperately needed, and is desperately needed for us when we're in this place of disappointment, is discernment. Do you know, you don't need discernment to see the misery of the world or to see where the enemy is at work in the world. Anybody can do that. It takes discernment to see where God is at work, even in the midst of chaos. It's one of the things I encourage us to do when we come back for coffee. And that's what God has done with Elijah. He started with disappointment and a complaint, and then God shares his perspective and reminds him that he's not alone. He has hope. Today, maybe you are feeling a little bit like that, and you are struggling. Maybe you're feeling alone. Perhaps today the world feels a hostile place. Circumstances are unsafe. Maybe you feel you're the only Christian in the particular bubble, whether it be family or wherever else that you're working in. My first encouragement is that you don't run away from God. Slow down. Find that space to find the stillness, the quiet of God. Cry out to him. He doesn't mind. He can take that all day long. And then get back with Christians who can remind you that you are not alone. Let's pray.